Welcome to Nell and Matt's Obsolete Movies, the podcast where we revisit movies from our 20-plus years of collecting films on obsolete formats. Our film for this episode is Running Scared, from 1986. Though, strangely, as I found out, we have Running Scared on Laserdisc, and for some reason, someone decided, 7 years after the 1986 release of Running Scared, that the film warranted a deluxe letterbox edition Laserdisc in 1993.
Wow.
And we have come to purchase this in the last few years since, what was it, Laserdisc was what, my birthday last year? My birthday in 2019,
So,
to purchase from Half Price Books for like $4, this deluxe letterbox edition of this fine piece of American cinema, or whatever the hell this movie is, which we're going to get into. Why did we watch this movie again?
It was your idea.
It was my idea. Initially, okay, so we watched some MTV Classic, and there was a video for a Michael McDonald song that was, like, a hit or whatever. Or there was a time when Michael McDonald was a big deal.
Yeah.
Musically.
That's true. And
which is hard to imagine.
No, and actually, for the longest time, all I knew about this movie was that music video.
Yes.
And both Billy Crystal and Gregory Hines dancing in... cutoff tops.
This is correct.
Which was really bizarre. So I think they did it for the ladies so we could see their belly buttons as they were dancing. So they were in like crop tops in that video. And that's all I really knew about this movie for the very longest time.
Yes. And as watchers of MTV Classic, you see this video, you know?
A lot, yeah.
Yeah. And so I thought, oh, 80s farcical buddy comedy cop movie, right? I mean, isn't that a time, a place, a thing that you don't maybe, doesn't necessarily happen anymore? And so I thought, what a lovely nostalgia trip. But it wasn't, and the world changes, and so here we are talking about this movie.
Yeah, that's bizarrely paced, has a very strange, convoluted, but weirdly convenient plot.
We need to explain that. I think that's before we go further. So, the movie is Billy Crystal, Gregory Hines... They're buddy undercover cops.
Also, wait a second. I want to know what coke-fueled dream in the 80s was like, let's pair these guys. Like, you know, like there was the producers and screenwriters had just coked up and they're like, all right, we got to cast it. All right, fuck it. Let's do Billy Crystal. Awesome!
Yes.
Gregory Hines! Sweet! Like,
as action heroes. As smart-ass action heroes.
Who thought that this was a...
In a super violent film.
Yeah, and you know...
And in that, like, cartoonish, bloodless, violent film. But there's, like, a lot of gunshots in this movie.
Well, you know, the weird thing is, just to go back to, you know, Gregory Hines for a second, I mean, he was really known as a dancer. And so he had two really prestigious films under his belt by the time he did this. So he did White Nights, which is about actually him being an American dancer in communist Russia, and The Cotton Club. So these were two actually highly regarded films that he did, and he decided to do... this. Now, Billy Crystal, you could get, he had not hit When Harry Met Sally yet, or City Slickers, or he hadn't hit his run of comedy.
He hadn't hosted the Oscars yet.
Which is probably why this came out at that time, because that would have been right around, he was hitting it big with all of those comedies.
Ah, then suddenly the Laserdisc reissue makes sense.
But yeah, so it's a very odd pairing, because Billy Crystal at the time probably would have been known best for Saturday Night Live. And I believe he only had maybe three or four films prior to this, and he had very minor roles in those films. So it would have been Soap and Saturday Night Live that people really knew him from. So it was really bizarre to think of using him in that particular role. But you have to wonder if it was the Eddie Murphy effect, right? Because Eddie Murphy had 48 Hours, Beverly Hills Cops, which were huge films. I believe Beverly Hills Cop made like $300 million box office.
Smart-ass, wisecracking cops who were fearless are suddenly cool when this film comes out. Which, in a film that maybe we should revisit at some point later in the podcast, takes it to its self-aware, cartoonish extreme in the Damon Williams, Bruce Willis vehicle, The Last Boy Scout, where they're sort of like, oh, detectives have to do this sort of thing now. You know, it became such a predictable trope that you could then, oh, look at everybody, it's a predictable, we're doing a predictable trope, and we're letting you know, and that way you could be smarter than this movie, because you're in on the joke too now. There's no ironic distance here. No. This is meant to be high entertainment, or a popcorn movie, essentially, is what it's meant to be.
With a very bizarre plot.
With a very bizarre plot. So, yes, this plot... Okay, so they're undercover cops. They come upon a bust or not a bust, and they wisecrack their way, and they arrest this guy, and then they take him to Billy Crystal's aunt's funeral, and then they come back, and then there's a dead undercover cop that they find that's kind of a joke, and then they're forced to go on vacation in the Keys.
After messing up a big drug bust.
After messing up a huge drug bust, where they dream of buying this bar in the Florida Keys, but the nemesis that is Jimmy Smits, the untouchable drug kingpin, and I think that's part of the... There's like the deep cynicism in this film, which we'll get to in a moment, is played by, you know... Jimmy Smits, he's Gonzalez, and he's, you know, the coke comes from South America, so of course the...
Colombia, I believe.
Colombia, yes.
Specifically.
So, of course, the coke dealers all have to be sort of Latino, and we gotta talk about that, too. And then... Where's the plot go? I lost the plot. They come back. They try to bust them again, and then there's these like other cops who are like younger but like them but like haven't proven their mettle yet, and so Billy Crystal and Gregory Hines are like the cool high school seniors, and these other cops are like the bratty like high school sophomores, and so they need to get checked.
Yeah.
And then there's a chase scene with an undercover cop car that was converted to a cab with a nun and a priest in the back seat. And then somehow Billy Crystal gets back together with
his ex. Wait, on the subway.
On the L.
On the L.
It's Chicago. We're talking Chicago. It's on the L.
Also, oddly, way too long of a chase scene that... Went on. It was so bizarre. Like, yes. Beyond the fact that they were on the L, it wasn't exciting in any way, shape, or form. And it went way, way, way too long. So it's a very, like, I got bored of the chase scene. That's how long it
went. Yes, yeah,
and,
you know,
like, there's the French Connection. Like, you actually have... a fantastic model.
Yes.
Of how a chase scene in Chicago should go down. However, let's do this really poorly done chase scene that happened.
But and I then think... there's a confrontation with the Gonzalez Jimmy Smits character with a garbage truck, and so then they steal Jimmy Smits's car.
And drive around in it.
And drive around in it. And by the way, I mean, this is like, we are almost 10 minutes in this podcast. We're not through the plot yet. Right? I was like, we got to get to the plot first. We're still working on the plot. If you're listening, you might have to rewind and listen to this section of the podcast several times. If you haven't seen the film and have no desire to see the film, just to follow what we're talking about here, so then they drive around in this car, and then Billy Crystal's ex-wife, who is going to marry a dentist, who he obviously still loves, though there's absolutely no on-screen chemistry between them at all, gets kidnapped by Gonzalez because they have all of the coke, and Gonzalez is now in trouble because the cops have his coke, but he owes all these people money. So they arrange a big, fantastic shootout.
Which is actually kind of a boring shoot. Like, even for me, that shootout was not very, very exciting.
It was a long shootout.
It was a long...
This is an hour and 46-minute movie.
It was a very long...
For a buddy cop action film, it's an hour and 46 minutes.
You will spend a lot of time on Facebook when you watch this movie.
Yes, watching it in 2020 and you have a smartphone...
You're going to go to Facebook.
Right? I was shopping for electronics.
Or you're going to go on Instagram. Something's going to happen. Cute puppy photos are going to be called for at this particular moment.
eBay. I was doing eBay, actually. I will say. During the Elle's chase, especially, and the thing, I was on eBay.
Well, you know, the plot is really poorly done. And so, for me, it doesn't follow a typical plot structure. And there's like kind of really no rising tension and there's no resolution. It's just a very weird plot, which in a foreign film I'll fall for.
It's Italian. It's like, oh yes, we're meandering through eras here.
Yes, absolutely. But you know, they don't really evolve.
Fanny and Alexander, right?
Right.
Bergman
right.
can get away with it. Yeah.
But they don't really, like, for an action film, you don't want something that is poorly paced.
Yeah.
This has, and plotted.
This Laserdisc has, of the film itself, 33 chapters.
Wow.
And the trailer, 35 total, the two trailers.
Well, I think it's, you know, it's typically when you watch this action, like an action film, and, you know, the heroes will encounter the bad guy, something really bad will happen. Like a close friend is lost or the house is blown up and it's all about them redeeming themselves from this bad thing that happened and getting the bad guy in the end. But they literally meet the bad guy like 3, 4, 5 times. And it's just like these really bizarre interactions that are very contrived. I think for me, the one that got me is the supposed drug bust at the airport, which ended up being the one the police actually found.
Oh yes, there's a decoy drug bust. We forgot that. I mean, you know, you can't summarize this film without being the over-talkative 12-year-old.
Well,
you know what I mean? And then we went to get ice cream, and then they were out of sprinkles, so they had to have the chocolate sprinkles. And then I said to my friend, you know, like that, I mean, that's the only way. So, yes, no rising tension. So, Billy Crystal's ex-wife getting kidnapped, I'm looking at this, happens in chapter 27.
Right. So, there's...
So, that's where, oh no, there's real peril now.
Right.
Chapter 27, and the movie's over at chapter 33.
And there's no, like... Well, let me get back to that. And so there's this whole like decoy plot, and they just so happen to leave the airport and actually just see Gonzalez getting the real coke just randomly
from a nun and a priest.
From a nun, just randomly. And this is just how the film progresses. It's just like, oh, they turn a corner and there's the situation, or it's very, very, very strange. But yes, I mean, so his wife, they do follow that plot structure of like someone near and dear to them is caught, is been kidnapped.
Damsel in distress, yeah.
And they have to figure out where she is and time's running out. And, like, literally calls him. He's like, hey, let's meet here. And, like, you know, like, there's no...
Yes. And so then they drive over. And then there's a big shootout.
Which isn't very exciting. And though they're in glass elevators, he does not hit them when he shoots them, which is...
Yeah.
When Gonzalez tries to kill Billy Crystal's character and his wife, completely misses them in the glass
elevators.
And just happens. But it is for me, maybe it was a coke-fueled moment when he wrote the script and it felt like a great idea at the time.
We're just going to tell all the things. You know, I mean, it is one of those where like every clever idea they had.
Yeah.
Had to somehow make it as, oh, wouldn't it be cool if they drove on the L? And wouldn't it be cool if there was a confrontation where they got, you know, look, you know, like Star Wars when they're in the giant trash compactor? What if they ended up in, like, a garbage truck, you know? And, like, and so they do.
Yeah.
And their car gets compacted in a garbage truck.
And a good editor can really help with that kind of stuff. Yeah. And I don't think they had a really good editor.
I think they needed a script supervisor.
It was
to
like they
just kind of
M. Night Shyamalan of action films.
Yeah.
I love M. Night Shyamalan, but there's times where he could have used a better editor. But this for me was just, it did feel like that. It felt like a kitchen sink. Everything, every idea that they had was thrown into it. Without it necessarily, like, moving the plot or establish them as characters, it was very, very strange. But also I think, you know, part of the reason we looked at wanting to do this film is the normalization of violence and how, like, you know, cops interacting with supposed criminals and just kind of how normalized violence is. And so...
Mm-hmm.
That's why we initially chose to do this film.
Yeah.
Because, you know, because it's supposed to be a comedy, but still there's a lot of violence in it, and there's still a lot of really inappropriate situations. It also made me think about, like, early 80s films where homophobia was very much normalized.
Yeah.
You would hear just characters off-candidly calling each other gay or... gay wad, if you remember from mm-hmm. when we were younger. And it was normalized to have homophobia. Here, it is very normalized to use...
Excessive force.
Excessive force. Also, things like... the one scene where they're trying to get into the apartment, Gregory Hines' character says, I'm going to shoot this door, and if you happen to be standing there and get holes in you, that's your fault. And it's supposed to be funny, but it actually... isn't, because they didn't have a warrant. They didn't have actually any reason to bust this guy other than the neighborhood he was in. And they actually say that. You know, they said, well, probable cause, he's in this neighborhood.
At night, this car.
This car in this neighborhood.
Neighborhood is probable cause.
Probable cause.
Which is...
Yeah.
Very problematic. And, of course, you have then this figure, the foil of the captain.
Yeah.
Who... gets really upset over things, I guess, like the Bill of Rights.
Right, which is
you
funny.
You know, he's the one that's supposed to be like, you need to restrain your violence, you need to not be crazy all the time.
Well, they come upon a scene where there's at the time they think it's a jumper. And so one of the other cops says to Gregory Hines and Billy Crystal, were you interrogating him on the roof? And the captain asked them the same question, were you interrogating this guy on the roof? And so the captain ends up being the one who is the moral compass, who questions what they're doing.
And he's a buffoon.
And also, rightfully so, like, there had been an undercover drug bust that if they actually hadn't gotten involved with, the funny thing about this film, it could have been 10 minutes long. Because... there had been a month, several month long, undercover drug bust going on that if they hadn't fumbled into the situation by accident and messed everything up, they would have actually been, Gonzalez would have been taken down by the other undercover cops who had been putting this in place for months to do this. So they actually mess everything up, so it could have been just like 10 minutes, but rightfully so they got in trouble for messing up this really important drug bust, but the captain is the buffoon and the bad guy for telling them
to restrain shouldn't shoot somebody. I mean, they also make jokes about how many times they've shot people,
right? Absolutely.
Which, you know, in the weight of seeing this and thinking about this now,
yeah,
in 2020, in the shadow of seeing a movie like Do Not Resist, which is something don't waste your time on this movie. I'll say, see Do Not Resist, mm-hmm. about the militarization of priests, of police. Freudian slip. Priests were last week's episode. militarization of police and the way that, as some would say, on the maybe the post-Reagan era in this country, security and policing and the military under the auspices of security are maybe the one public value that is unquestionable, mm-hmm. and the one public value that most taxpayers are still willing to pay for. Mm-hmm. And look at the current contemporary state of moral rot that we are now in.
Yeah.
Where we are always now, we are becoming hyper aware of excessive force.
Yeah.
Of racial profiling.
Yeah. Which happens in this movie.
And which does happen in this movie.
Yeah.
And again, it's a buddy cop comedy joke. And though it may seem sort of extreme to draw this line, but I don't think so. This way in which maybe we got from this moment of, you know, having firm checks and balances in place and procedures and belief in a justice system that's at least fair,
yeah.
or at least preserves the rights of everyone, even of criminals, to this, you know, a large portion of the population looks at Black Lives Matter and says, you know, this is the descent into anarchy. This is, you know, good luck without the police, good luck without all this violence, you know.
Which is so funny, because in this film, they are chaos, right? The yeah. cops are chaos, and they actually bring anarchy wherever they go. There's this one scene where they're questioning not even a suspect. They just want to get information from a guy, and they start tattooing his face. They have him pinned down, and they're trying to tattoo his face. And yeah. so the punchline is that there's not ink in it,
but
he's going to, I think he was going to tattoo, like,
I'm a snitch
or something like that. And it's supposed to be funny, and it celebrates the excessive force where it wasn't needed. Like, none of that was needed. And even the scene where, so with the Gonzalez, they're kind of throughout the movie trying to bust Gonzalez really ineffectively, to be honest with you. Even when they finally get the coke, it's like haphazardly that they get the coke. So nothing is actually well done or thought out. But there's a scene where they're trying to track down Gonzalez. They're at an apartment, and a woman opens the door. They're trying to get information from her, and he threatens to call immigration. And she didn't do anything wrong. He's just trying to find out information, but he felt like it was an okay tactic to say, I'm going to call immigration on you.
Yeah.
And so for me, as I mentioned before, I think it's what ends up happening is these certain normalizations that happen, right?
Yeah.
I was even thinking another great documentary to watch is
Roll Red Roll.
There we go. Sorry. Tongue twister. It's an amazing documentary that looks at how...
Well, it's the Steubenville rape case. It's the Steubenville rape case. Infamous Steubenville high school football player rape case.
And how, like, in interviewing the community members, many of them are just like, boys will be boys, kind of, you know, that it's okay. Football players get drunk. And if you're a stupid girl to be there, that's your issue. So I think we have this tendency to normalize things through our film and through our culture that make things look okay and seem okay.
And especially for a film that is as tediously unoriginal as this.
Yeah.
In that all of these tropes, I mean, how many buddy cop action films is there? The supervisor, the authority figure, who is the always angry buffoon, you're always messing up, this thing happened, you know, and it's just this, like, tongue lashing. And then in the next scene, they're doing the same stuff.
Right. Right.
You know,
and by the end of the film, they're celebrated
for it. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, how many films sort of reinforce this message. So it's not like we're saying, you know, there's some grand conspiracy theory, Running Scared is why, how we got to... But the fact that these very recognizable, very tired, overused tropes from action films from that era, from the VHS era, if this podcast is really about the VHS era, the fact that it just uses these tropes on repeat again and again and again, it sort of reinforces maybe this deep cynicism about what law and order really is.
I mean, I understand, like, there is having a film where, you know, the buddy cops follow procedures and do the legwork and all the hard work isn't very exciting. You know, I get that. And you do want to have these moments of levity, but also having action and tension. But reinforcing that violence is okay to get what you want.
And especially, I mean, violence for state power, violence for order, violence for, you know, is excusable. Is hard to watch in 2020. It's not, the joke isn't funny anymore. This farcical thing is not, and if you look at this long trail of history of how, you know, an entire baby generation of older folks got to be so cynical about, you know, it used to be the rogue cop. I mean, the rogue cop as evil, as you know, as this thing you need to fight, as now the rogue cop is the thing that you're rooting for.
Exactly. You know, because they ensure law and order at any cost. And you know, the funny thing is, if I remember correctly, Gonzalez is brought in one time and kind of gets off.
Oh yes, because the system's broken.
But
right?
They actually didn't have the drugs, and they didn't really have anything to really keep him on. So of course the system is definitely broken with it. But our system is right, like, you're arrested and then you have to go to court, right? That's the system, right? Like, if you're arrested and you're charged, and actually if they don't have anything to hold you on, they can't
hold it is you. A system designed to give the benefit of the doubt to the accused.
And I think that's also the other thing, and the unfortunate thing that we're seeing is that it's almost like justice is being taken into the hands of police officers, and that's not their job, right? Their job is to arrest people when warranted, to bring them in, to go through our justice system. And though it might be flawed, it's still that reasonable doubt, still that opportunity. And so for this, they win at the end by killing the bad guy. Mm-hmm. And I know, again, that's not very exciting that he actually is arrested and has to be tried and goes to jail. But they take justice in their own hands. They kill him.
And she also mentioned, actually, somewhere in this plot, Billy Crystal does get shot.
Oh, yeah.
His character does get... We forgot about that! Because it's so convoluted and long. But there's a bust that goes wrong. Anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, this movie. The other thing I have to say about how weird this film is now, or this film is something that only made sense in its time, I think, is also the way that especially the Billy Crystal character, at moments of absolute danger, you know, he's in one scene, the failed first Gonzalez bus scene, he's in handcuffs and there's a gun in his face and they're about to kill him, and there's never... He's just, whatever, I'm a smart, wise-ass thing. And so there's just this distance. And then the other thing is, how many times does Billy Crystal somehow get into Gregory Hines' apartment while he's in bed with a woman?
Yeah.
That's a thing that happens several times. He shows up in the morning, and there's obviously been a night of amorous... erotic enjoyment, And then suddenly, hey, it's Billy. Hi, friend. You know, like, would, well, like, that is also weird.
We should also mention that Gregory Hines meets a girl at a bar who's in a relationship with somebody else. Actually gets that guy arrested so he can hook up with her again. Again, so not only Billy Crystal busting in multiple times when he's having sex, but, you know, Gregory Hines gets the girl of interest, boyfriend or husband, arrested just for the hell of it so you can hook up with her that night.
So this is part of the plot we forgot.
Yeah. Well, you know, yeah, and there's the whole time in Key West that's very, very bizarre.
Oh yeah, and then the Key West, yeah.
There's lots of roller skating in Key West. Lots yes. of roller skating that's happening. But you know what though, for me, like, so this actually could have been a really interesting film, you know, because being a police officer is highly stressful, right?
Yeah.
Like, you are putting yourself on the line in this role. So I'm not going to downplay the fact that if you choose to be a police officer, there isn't real danger with it. So there could have been this actually really fascinating kind of arc and discussion within the film of what it really means to be a police officer. And at what point in time do you decide that I need to retire? I need to walk away from this life. I don't want to put myself in a situation where I'm going to die. And they actually repeatedly put themselves in these stupid situations where
but
they could die.
But then they're going to buy the bar.
Yeah, they're going to buy the bar. So
did we mention buying the bar when we summarized the plot?
Oh, that's right. Well, but then they don't buy a bar.
They don't buy a bar.
They don't. I mean, I think they put the down payment on it, but they're, you know, whatever.
Which somehow Gonzalez finds out about this. Tries to bribe them.
By paying off the bar.
Yes.
And then also we forgot Billy Crystal's aunt dies and gives him money, and that's why he wants to buy a bar.
Why he wants to buy the bar.
In Key West.
And they think it's a civil rights lawyer. Is he going to be sued for excessive force?
That's exactly, because he doesn't want to talk to him. Yeah.
This again, getting sued by somebody beat up.
Yeah. So it really makes light of something that's not funny, which is excessive force.
Yeah. All right. The big five questions. Is it camp, retro, a classic, or just an old movie?
It's just an old movie.
Yeah.
For me. I don't think... I don't think it holds up very well. And if you want to see a good buddy cop movie, see Hot Fuzz. That's the better film.
See The Last Boy Scout if you want a 90s thing that's ironic and on VHS.
Beverly Hills Cop. Yeah. This for me, the plot was too bizarre. Their unnecessary use of excessive force. Very weird, convoluted, bizarrely paced film. And I also forgot to mention the writer of the film ended up missing for a while, and then his body was found his car and body were found in an aqueduct with his hands missing, his gun, and his computer.
Oh.
Yeah, that happened in the 90s.
Oh my.
Yeah, so the screenwriter actually had a very bizarre ending in his own way, which is very strange. But it's for me, it's just an old film, and honestly it made like $30 million versus Beverly Hills Cop $300 million. So I, you know, not a lot of people saw it, right? And I don't think it's a hidden gem. I don't think it holds up very well.
No, it's just an old movie.
Yeah,
for all those reasons. And we talked a lot about question two, the social political distance.
So I think one of the things we do need to talk... Two things. You mentioned it. His relationship with his wife is very bizarre. And she's just very much a plot device.
Yes.
She just kind of randomly pops in the picture a few times. And I think it's just because the screenwriter is like, wouldn't it be cool if his ex-wife gets kidnapped, he saves her, and they get back together. Like, that was really bizarre. Their kind of interactions that they had together. And then Gregory Hines is just kind of, he has an interest that while he's in Key West, sleeps with a bunch of other women. So it's not a real interest in it. The one thing that is interesting is that he's black. And I think that's actually fascinating. And he actually has top billing over Billy Crystal, which at the time would have made made sense. He would have had, again, successful films under his belt. So there's actually something interesting in the fact that you have a cop who is black. He actually is a sexual being. He is having relationships with women. He is a smart, funny, interesting person. He's very dynamic. The character was supposed to be white. It was written for a white person. The director had worked with Gregory Hines in the past and wanted to work with him again. So I do think it's very interesting that Gregory Hines was cast in this role that should have been two white men, two buddy cop white men. I think that's really fascinating. But I do think, you know, just like with Ripley, that Ripley in Alien was supposed to be a man. And, you know, then having Sigourney Weaver inhabit that role and doing such an amazing job. So I think it's really interesting that as a black man, he inhabited a role that was specifically written for a white man. But then there wasn't any discussion about what does it mean to be a black cop. Like, that's just kind of ignored.
Yeah, that's, and it almost, again, it all of these, you know, very nefarious things are happening.
Yeah.
Comedy allows you to, I think, get away with things.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that there is this light farcical tone, you know, no matter what happens, Billy Crystal always has something funny to say. That character always is funny.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's not to use grad school language, but there is a certain hegemony here. There is a certain, like, it all fits into this perfect worldview. You know,
yeah, I mean, I think, well, I was just even going to say, all of the criminals that they encounter are Latino, right? Like, they're all...
Well, except for the two armed robbers.
Oh, that's true.
And Snake.
And Snake.
But Snake's a punk.
Snake, but he's vaguely...
He's a punk.
He's, you know, he's Joe... Pantoliano played him, who's the famous character actor. I think he was going... They were trying to go for vaguely Latino.
And I think there's also something to be said in terms of the distance, the way that the film... So this is in Chicago.
Yeah.
And again, this given that urban space is dangerous and that urban space is where nefarious things happen, which I guess there's still folks who live in the suburbs who believe that. But, come on. You know, I mean, so I think there is that, even that bigger American mythology of, you know, get away from that path, you know, get away from the urban space, which is also the Key West sequence.
Yeah.
Where they just go and hang out and look at the sunset. In terms of the technical distance from the film, it's old-fashioned analog effects.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it still looks...
Good.
Good. It still looks contemporary. Yeah. The cars were a little old, but
yeah,
that's about it. The room test. Is there anything in the film that Gregory Hines' character does keep a police motorcycle in his bedroom?
He does, and he wears a really awkward Speedo in one of the scenes in Key West, which was a little strange to me.
There's some fashion choices that are
a little strange. I think because the plot is so weird, I found myself noticing things like, why is there the motorcycle? Like, why are they doing this? Why is this happening? I noticed that they had Dunkin' Donuts, right? Like, they brought Dunkin' Donuts. I was like, I wonder how much they paid for that product placement. So there are things, because it's so... The pacing is very bizarre
In this weird way, I mean, it's kind of remarkable, is that this film has both too much and too little.
Yeah.
It's a convoluted plot that is somehow still too convenient.
Yes. And you notice those conveniences. You really notice it. You know, they just happen to be... at the, you know, I'm assuming staking out, but they don't let you really know what they were staking out, but they were just like at a basketball court. They happen to see this guy, you know, they happen to see Gonzalez at the airport. There's all these weird convoluted things.
Well, Chicago's not a very big place. And so if you're just kind of out, you kind of see the same 20 people.
It's so true. Oops. Sorry.
That's all right.
Whoops.
They're wearing your boots. That did clip. But anyway, So is it a keeper?
No.
No.
I do not. The first time I think we watched it, it was like fascinating. Like,
and just that it is it's this thing that only made sense in 1986.
Right. I think that's why we watched it.
You could only make this movie in 1986.
I think the first time we saw it, I was like, whoa, they chose Billy Crystal and Gregory Hines for this film.
For this action movie.
And then to watch it again, for me, there wasn't anything fun about it or interesting about it. They didn't bring anything new to the table around an action film. And the plot drove me crazy.
Yeah.
Not a great film.
Not a great film.
There's so many better films to see.
Yes. And on that happy note, we'll be back. Podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, our website. And hey, this week I bought a Betamax player, so now we have Betamax.
Another format that we
obsolete
can add.
Format now. Because let's face it, what, no beta? Like, yeah, we got beta now, okay? So, we got beta. Bye.
Bye.